take shows like this, like our interview here with, I call him a noted expert on what's happening in the market, because he's always ahead of the curve, and his name is Robert Kudla. He's joining us, and although the news on the food, the gas, and the housing front is devastating. Numbers came out on Friday. There is good news in certain segments of our economy. And we want to really give you the good news here, and the fact that if you know what you're doing and you know where to put your money, you're going to be okay. And this is, I really can't stress this enough, folks. There is a dark side, and then there's the light, and you can make a decision which direction you want to move. Bob, welcome to the show. And it's almost like our economy is schizophrenic.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's schizophrenic, but it's really not. I mean, look, the Federal Reserve, central bankers in general have gone on a campaign to basically, you know, kill off the economy. And now everybody's surprised that it's actually being killed off. And the whole inflation narrative is going to be going away here very, very soon. I mean, you know, we're talking on a Monday morning here, and the PMI came out, and it was very negative. And so contraction level stuff. And so they overshot, unprecedented moves higher. You know, in fact, I think, and maybe we could talk about this on another podcast, but I think these moves by the world central bankers are going to actually force the politicians to basically take over the central banks around the world, because they are operating at cross purposes for politicians' abilities to get reelected. And I think that's become a problem. I've been reading article after article about how in Europe, that they said the central banks are not doing what they should be doing, you know, France in particular. And then you have obviously China owns their central bank, Turkey owns their central bank. You know, you have Janet Yellen doing some games with Treasury money to basically kneecap the Fed in terms of you know, the bond yields and stuff like that. So it's getting to a point now where you know, it's causing pain in the elite circles. So I think you're going to start seeing whatever this move is going to have to abate. If you look at what happened in England, right, a couple of weeks ago, they blew up their bond market.
Yes.
Okay. And now, you know, Japan, if you saw on Friday, they had to, you know, they had to shove $50 billion into their Forex markets to keep the yen from wiggling out of control. And today the yuan in China, primarily because of Xi's power play, the yuan is collapsing. So, you know, and then you have even the Swiss franc, which is really the strongest currency in the world, had to get swap lines from the United States government. So king dollar is becoming emperor dollar. And you know, in one way, shape, or form, it's kind of good. But in many ways, if it's too far, too fast, it causes dislocations, and it causes what, you know, you just euphemistically call the schizophrenia, is that, you know, the real world is ahead of the data right now. And so we can look around, the data that the governments are using are smooth data, and they're not reflecting reality on the ground today.
So what you're saying is the wrong people are being hurt, and there's going to be a sea change?
Well, now everybody's being hurt, you know.
That's the wrong people, if the elite are being hurt, right?
Yeah, so it's okay if the poor get poorer, but now the rich are getting poorer. Look, there was only one way this could go. You know, if you're going to bring down asset prices, the only people that own assets are rich people, okay? And so I think people can tolerate and stomach some pullbacks and retrenchment, but it's getting to a point now where, you know, you're blowing up whole industries. And so, you know, the National Association of Realtors are a very, very powerful lobbying bloc. And a lot of people don't know that. I think it's 16 states where GDP, 30% of GDP is real estate related activities, and California is one of them. And so it's not going to take long before they start firing up that lobbying engine, okay? And you have states like California and New York that are blowing up because of that, coupled with a tech implosion, is that they're going to be screaming too for relief. But I think, like I said before, Jerome Powell's not fighting inflation, he's fighting something else, and I think we just saw what he was fighting come to light over the weekend in Beijing.
And what's that, regime change or sea change politically? What's he fighting specifically?
Yeah, Xi just took over, basically knocked out the reformers, and he's going full hard on. So you have that, and you have Russia. And they're obviously rightfully concerned about the dragon bear. I'm personally not. Both those regimes are fraught with their fracture. They look solid, but it's like dropping a piece of glass onto the ground. So it's easily fractured. But that's what they're fighting. They're trying to keep a competing system from embedding into the world economy. And now they finally got China to devalue their yuan. And at first it's going to seem like it's a great idea, but at the end of the day, China has to import all its raw materials in order to export its finished goods. And so it becomes a problem for China, and Xi's scaring a lot of will be scaring a lot of industries out of China here pretty soon, because you don't want to be the industry in his crosshairs next.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, let's take this to a practical level. You own Trade Genius and operate that within the market with a group of investors that you help train. How are you doing with regard to this economic interesting set of times we're in?
We're probably having the best 4 weeks of our business here. We caught the downdraft in September. We told our subscribers, based on our algorithms, that October is going to be a push higher, and it has been. And we told people to stay the course in energy. People listening to me for months now, I said energy, 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 energy's just fine. Where if you had a portfolio of energy, you're down 4 or 5% for the year. If you had a portfolio of the stock market, you're down 25% a year. And that's not going to change next year. It's going to be the revenge of the fossil fuels next year. Copper prices are going through the roof. It's going to kill the renewable energy market. Okay. Cobalt prices are getting out of hand, and lithium prices are at their high. So is the fact renewables are going to become uncompetitive against fossil fuels again, and you're going to see a renaissance in nuclear. So that's where we're positioned, and we're quite happy about it. And we've just been knocking it out of the ballpark for our subscribers, and I sent you over a few notes over what people say. I mean, we've changed people's lives this last month.
No, you really have. I'm looking at some of these comments here, and they're praiseworthy towards you, and they give you a lot of credit. Well, I've been saying this too. I mean, there are niche businesses like yourself, specific businesses that are outrunning inflation, that are providing people with reliable income. And you're managing to do that, and these comments reflect that. It's just you have to know where to go and put your money. In general, investment is a stupid idea. You need to have the niche. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, look, I mean, my whole trading career was overweighting sectors that I think are going to do better, my personal portfolio. And that's how you win in this game. And people just doing generally passive income with the broad market are over time they don't do very well, especially if if the big boys start to roll over, which they will in this next down cycle, they make the rest of the market go down farther than it normally would. So I tend to stay away from that, other than just day trading, in that environment. But I'm mostly interested in overweighting sectors that I think are getting the bid, that our algorithm says there's momentum coming into them, and you just ride those memes, if you will. And a lot of these are some of these are secular, that 1 or 2 year moves. So that's where we are. We're on the energy train. I think for the last 18 months, I've been just telling people, when in doubt, buy dips in energy, you're going to be fine. And look, next year, coal is going to do fantastic. Uranium is going to continue to grind higher. Natural gas and oil are going to continue to move higher. And the guys who get that stuff out of the ground, transport it, and store it are all going to do well as well. So,
Do you think the oil companies know this?
yeah, I mean, look, our family's biggest position is ExxonMobil, and it's almost at all-time highs right now. So the oil companies know it. It's the smaller companies where the niches are starting, but the big move just started about a month ago again. I mean, we're having some explosive moves. We're in XLE right now for our subscribers, and told them to get in at 84. It's sitting around 87, 88 right now. It's probably going to go to 100. These are big moves. 15% moves in a couple months is it's good living. And so that's where we have people. And then the coal companies are all out of debt. They all were almost bankrupt 2 years ago, and now they're printing so much cash that they're going to start buying back shares and paying massive dividends. So coal is going to be a great position to be in. And I don't know if you noticed, but Cameco Energy just bought, the uranium miner just bought Westinghouse Services. So they're going to be managing the nuke plants that their uranium is going to be being utilized. So they just basically bought their customer base. And so there's just a lot of things to focus on the good side. And then on the food side, you have the ag chems are gonna do well. They're very volatile, so they're really more tradable, or you have to be really long term. They're harder to swing, so you either got to grab them quick, or you hold them for a long period of time. But fertilizer is still going to be at a deficit at least through next year. Then a lot of supply is going to come on board. So that helps. And if inflation takes hold, the way I think it's going to happen is you're going to get the grocery stores are going to do well. So there's just always going to be some opportunities in here, and we're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, okay, but let me tell you what the farmers are telling me. And I have a lot of farmers that follow my show. They're very concerned about the availability of fertilizer, and that the scarcity will drive the price up, and they think this will affect overall crop yield next year. They don't look at it in a very rosy way. So what would you say to these guys?
Yeah, I mean, look, supply is coming online now. Higher prices tend to bring out more supply. So at least I know the farmers that I know are able to get whatever they need, but at higher
Yeah,
prices.
there you go.
They're
Exactly.
more worried about getting diesel fuel, because we have a 28-day supply of diesel fuel right now.
Yes, I saw that. Is that going to come into play, or do you think Biden's going to be forced to move to mitigate that?
Well, I don't know what he can do. I mean, other than just ask. They keep intervening in the they keep intervening in the energy markets to try to manipulate prices down to try to get reelected. And the refiners have not been producing diesel, and I think we've exported diesel too this year like idiots. And so now we have a low supply in storage. And the refiners are going to have to pivot to diesel. When they pivot to diesel, then it's going to raise gasoline prices because they're pivoting away from gasoline. So it's a problem. And the problem is that for the last 10 years, the Democrats have told the industry that we're trying to put you out of business, and so they've underinvested in refinery capacity. I think ExxonMobil is the only company right now that is actually putting in a massively new refinery in the United States.
Yeah.
But we need more refinery capacity. I mean, this this politics of our energy future by trying to force behavior changes through shortages is not working. I think the Europeans have found that out, and the Democrats are going to probably find out within 2 weeks here at their election what people really think about forcing me to change versus letting the marketplace drive change through incentive and technological improvement. And look, they're trying to force everybody into renewables, but now we're going to have a renewables material shortage. So at the end of the day, we get nothing.
Is that because silver suppressed and a lot of the other minerals that are needed to support the new energy sector are not available?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, silver is going out the door like nobody's business, but it's mostly copper. There's no copper left in storage around the world. I think there's a 4.5 day supply. And how are you gonna, and China was hoarding it, and there I just posted in our room today that China's stocks are down to zero. So I don't know how we're gonna get all these Green New Deal cars when we have no
Minerals,
Green New Deal materials.
yeah.
Yeah.
I that's something I've raised. Listen, I wish they would straighten out the battery deal and make the car more affordable. I like the idea of an electric car, but right now there's too many bugs and lack of material to produce enough. I have a feeling the change is coming suddenly, and the change is here. Let me read to you one of the comments you sent over to me from one of your investors. It says, "I am new here about a week. It took a bit of getting used to the format and how to interpret what was being discussed, but now I am up for 3 of the 5 days and I'm getting the hang of it. I was up $742 yesterday and over $1,500 today. Thanks, guys." That to me just, and there's a few other comments in here that parallel this. I just read this as representative of other comments. It looks like the change is happening and dramatically in certain sectors that people who work with Trade Genius are realizing these kind of profits.
Yeah, look, we're trying to keep people on the side of the boat that's staying dry, and it's really not that hard, Dave. It's just that they try to complicate things for people, and then people make tactical mistakes in trading. So we just try to get people to be on the right side of the trade at the right time. And what we've done is we've created algorithms, and if people want to trade with us, we've created a set of pretty effective algorithms that start all the way from the Fed all the way down to stock level momentum and levels. And we give you access to most of these algorithms, and we give you access to our bot that is pushing out trade. You get access to my personal
What do you mean by the bot?
trades.
Can you explain the
Well,
bot?
we yeah, so I have all my trade ideas come from my bot. And so I scan those and offer trades every day just to prove the model, if you will. But I decided just to put the bot out there too. So whenever the bot gets a trade signal, it gets pushed out to our subscribers. So it's pretty cool. And again, it's very effective. Basically two out of every three of those trades work out, just like the ones that I personally curate. And so we have a bot for that. We have a bot for people that want to day trade SPY. These aren't trading bots. These are trade signal bots. Okay. So we don't trade your portfolio. We don't give you financial advice. We educate you and tell you where trades are setting up. And that's what the bot does.
Okay.
And then we train you on how to trade. We have a series of, I don't know, I guess we're up to like 25 training classes out there. And then we have trading rooms. Like I said, I put a trade out every day, and the bot puts out trades whenever they show up out of my watch list.
Yeah, I mean,
What's
there's still opportunities like this available. I say people better pay attention to organizations like yours because there's a shrinking number of economic opportunities right now that I'm hearing about. And I just, we briefly talked about this before we came on, Bob. The cost of housing versus what people are making now, 62% of Americans have trouble affording a 2-bedroom apartment. That's what the latest numbers tell us. And so they need to look for safe havens where to go to make money. It's just absolutely insane. I want to ask you this too, very quickly. Do you think Biden's economic numbers are anywhere close to reality? He's bragging the economy is, quote, strong as hell. Look at our unemployment rate, it's so low. I maintain the unemployment rate's low because people stopped working. They won't work for less than 20,000 a year or less than 30,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, I may surprise you with the answer. Our economy is not doing bad at all. The problem with our economy is that people aren't making enough money in it. I mean, it sounds like I'm talking on both sides of my mouth, is that we have a labor shortage in this country, but it's going to take a while for employers to realize they have to raise salaries for people in order to get them to come to them to work. And so, in one sense, Biden's right. In the other sense, he causes the reason why it doesn't happen. So, you're going to see, just like the rents are going to ratchet down over time, and salaries are going to ratchet up over time, and onshoring is going to come here, and it's going to raise wages as well.
What's the motivation for onshoring to come back here?
Oh, it's just national security, number one, and number two, the it's the dollar and the currencies are so out of whack around the world that you're seeing trading is collapsing around the world. So you're going to see more and more onshoring to for look. Everybody's going to have to become their own fortress because they're going to have to repress their financial systems to keep their currencies from imploding.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I get that. I totally get that. I thought the thing that Trump did best with the economy was the deal he struck with major manufacturers to return to America. It had such an impactful, it was just really good for working class Americans. I mean, they saw record rises in income, and unemployment was really low. And I said, but you think it's going to take the threat of war to get these industries back for national security?
Well, it's going to be the threat of whatever China is going to do to get them out of China. So, he may start arresting people. He may try to steal their technology in a more aggressive way. Whatever it is, he may try to ban the exports of like medical supplies. And, remember, we got a taste of it during the pandemic, right? When China refused to export masks and other consumables. Is what if they decide to do that with antibiotics, right? So you're basically we have a national security issue here, and that thing's going to come bite us in the rear end if we don't get our arms around some of the things we're totally dependent on China for. And we did some shots across the bow on China too. We basically decapitated their chip industry. Okay, so I could see some tit for tat here, and maybe what's preventing him from doing that is China is desperately in need of our food, right? So, there is some mutually assured destruction between us, but we can more easily move a plant, a factory, out of China to the U.S. than China being able to grow enough food for their people. You see what I'm
Yeah,
saying?
exactly. Yeah, because
So,
the need is so enormous.
right, it's asymmetric, and so yeah, those issues, and just remember the countries that export the most food around the world, right? Three of the five of them are Five Eyes. Four of the five are Five Eyes, right?
What do you mean by that?
Not well, the Five Eyes are the five Anglo countries, right? So they call them the Five Eyes. So you have New Zealand, Australia, United States, Canada, and England. Four of the five are major food exporters. Okay, so that's a pretty powerful block. And then beyond that you have basically Argentina and Brazil who won't follow along, but they can only export so much. The whole world relies on them, right? So you're basically having a food exporting cartel forming in a very non It's not structured. It's kind of informal. But yeah, so if the United States decides to not export their food to anybody, and we force Canada's hand, Australia will come along willingly because they're tired of the Chinese too. Is that China's in a world of hurt. They'd have to pay a fortune for their food. Argentina and Brazil raise their prices in a heartbeat, right? So, and Russia will take advantage of that as well. So you have that's a sword probably hanging over the Chinese more than anything else, is that they gotta ensure a steady and a reasonably priced food supply above and beyond what they can produce. And they polluted their country into death, and central planning never works. So they're gonna have efficiency issues within the country. So I think that probably keeps China from going too balls out here.
Yeah, okay, that I understand that. There's still some confusing things out there, because okay, you got the digital currency that's supposedly coming, Executive Order 14067. I'm really beginning to doubt that Biden can pull this off, because so much of the world has announced that they're moving towards gold-backed. So who are you going to trade with? How do you see the planned coming digital currency, which I think is going to be difficult to bring in?
Yeah, I'm looking at the world right now, and I call it the New World Disorder,
Yeah,
right?
really.
So
Yep.
we're actually breaking down into blocks. So you got the Dragon Bear block, you're gonna have the Five Eyes block, you got the non-aligned nation block, and then you got Europe sitting there with a thumb up their rear end, And so that's how I see, then you have the OPEC block. So I think you're just going to see a series of trading blocks forming around the world. And look, in this environment right now, people aren't going to try to create a worldwide currency because nobody trusts anybody. So, that's going to have to either have to, something really bad happen, then the Antichrist takes over, or we're gonna have really good economic news again, and everyone's gonna feel good about kumbaya, and they're gonna link it that way. But individual countries may try it, like China does and stuff like that. But unless enough countries do it, it's gonna be difficult to maintain the capital controls and stuff like that for it to work in practice.
Do you think that America will try to venture into digital, or will it kind of like raise the white flag and move towards gold?
Oh, and they won't move towards gold. As long as Janet Yellen's alive, it's not going to happen. She's absolutely is going to in the next 2 years, if she's still around, and Treasury Secretary, she's going to push for a test of the CDBC. She doesn't care. Okay, she's trying to kneecap Powell right now through some version of an Operation Twist,
Can you
and so she's.
explain what that is?
Yeah, so she's going to take money they have in the Treasury, okay, and they're going to use that cash from bond sales, and they're going to buy back the older bonds that are more expensive, and they're going to drive down the average yield of the issued bonds around the world. And so, because what Powell's doing is basically raising the cost of those bonds, and it's making more and more difficult for the administration to manage the interest payments, right? So they're probably go down that path. And if that fails, politicians are going to get knee deep inside the Federal Reserve. So it's going to be a very interesting time. Whenever you think they're going to be in charge, you think the government's going to allow a private central bank to be able to manage every transaction in the world?
Not without a fight, no.
Yeah, politician,
No.
I don't care if you're progressive, you're not going to allow an entity that's not you in control of your population. You're going to want to be in charge of your population. So that's why I think we're going to see the end of central banking as we know it in the next couple of years.
So does that mean diversification into things like gold, silver, crypto? Niche marketing in the stock market, is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, you want to buy stuff that people need.
Exactly. That's where I was going with it.
So, if you look at the stock market and there's something people want versus some people need, you buy the stock of things that people want. I mean, need, not want. Because, you can do without stuff you want, but you can't do without stuff you need.
Okay, just briefly, let me put the lens of that on what you're doing in Trade Genius. I'm sure it's reflective. How is Trade Genius doing what people need? I know you said energy, and I totally agree. You got to drive to work, and we have an energy-based economy that we ship everything. Anything beyond that?
Well, yeah, here's the stocks that we're live with right now. We own Wheaton Precious Metals. We own PLM, which is the United States-based multi-metal miner out of Minnesota. Okay, we own XLE, which is primarily U.S. Energy and production companies. We own Hecla Mine, which is a U.S.-based silver miner. Okay, we own Quad U, which is a U.S.-based uranium miner. We own Western Vanadium and Uranium, which is a U.S.-based vanadium and uranium company. We own a boatload of energy names that do storage and transportation. So that's where we are, and we're in and out of MP Materials. We're in and out of LAC at the time. We're in FFCX,
What's that?
which
What's
is
FCX and LAC?
LAC is Lithium America, which is an American-based lithium company. And then you have FCX, which is Freeport-McMoRan, which owns the five largest copper mines in the United States. You see my theme
I
here?
do, I
You
do.
want to own local and you want to own miner. And they're all doing well. We're making money in all of them. So, and that's just the start. Remember, countries around the world are going to nationalize their mines. They're not going to let, global companies that steal higher prices for metals without them taking their cut. So you want to be in the United States, you want to be in Canada, you want to be in Australia, okay, where there's a general consensus on how to treat private property, okay, instead of being in Africa where the dictator of the day decides that what you're receiving is not enough for him, or in Indonesia where they we'll just send the workers on strike, So you have a better situation here. So I'd rather own things that are in my country, where at least I understand the laws. Whether I agree with all of them or not, it's irrelevant. But I know there's private property rights for minerals and for oil and gas and coal, and and uranium. So, and same with Canada. Canada can't survive without their extraction industries, so they don't screw around with them too much. And so that's where you put your money. You don't have to overthink this at all, and just in and out, rinse and repeat. If you can catch a tech stock, automation is where we're moving to next. So, not enough workers. Workers want too much money. What do? You automate.
Yeah,
So
okay.
that's
So,
our theme for 2023. Yeah, so no need to boil the ocean, Dave. Those are the areas you stay in. And if we have deflation, you buy bonds. I mean,
this is
it's
what
not that
your
hard.
bots tell you too, that okay, for the next 2 weeks, this is a good place to be with your investments. That's what I assume the bots do for you. And so here's my general question. Why the hell aren't more companies using bots like what you have to guide their investments? And why are so many of them getting killed? Do they just lack foresight? I mean, how do you explain that?
I don't know. I don't know what they do wrong, but when you're in the lead dog, Dave, you don't sniff another dog's butt. So we don't really look at what other people are doing. So we're trying to drive the market forward. We know the Fed drives liquidity, which drives the stock market. We know the dollar drives pricing for commodities around the world. We know governments overpay, so commodity prices are going to go high, higher. So, we know certain things, and so you just get into those sectors. I'm sure there's other people probably doing as well or better than us in niches. I don't know who they are, but for what we do, I think we're the only ones really doing it this way, because we're not really a investment shop. We're an education shop,
Exactly,
Dave.
yeah. But how long?
So I don't have to. I don't have to. I'm not bound by my investment thesis. If I see a trade that looks good for people, I just simply point it out to them, saying this is where you might want to put your money, because I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just an educator.
Yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying, but your success rate separates you from a lot of the people that I know that are investing in the market and have not done well. And I ask them, I say, do you have any bots you get to follow? How long are your trades? And they can't even answer those questions for me. So let me ask you that question. Typically at Trade Genius, knowing there's variability, how long do your trades last? I would imagine you're shifting quite a bit if you're following a bot.
Well, it's our average trade's about 3 days.
Oh my gosh.
And but some stuff we're in for months and some stuff we're in for hours. So as a general rule, I'm trading in and out of the same stocks over the course of a couple months, right? So, when it goes from undervalued to overvalued, you hop off and you let it come back in again, then you take the trade again. So, and just so people know too, I created the bot. So we know what goes into it. So it's, I don't have some Wizard of Oz that's doing this work for us. We know what goes into the momentum calculations, and as things change, we modify our bots for the changing conditions.
Yeah, so. I'm not asking you for trade secrets, but are the bots geared towards elements that are weighted by percentage of importance?
For the most part, human nature never changes. So, we basically look at levels and we look at momentum, okay? So it's just math. And so, if you think of stock trading as like a sine wave, you kind of bounce in the channel between fear and greed. And then the markets like to trade in ranges for a while. And so we basically use Fibonacci's and momentum indicators to establish our ranges. And when those things break one way or the other, that's information for our bot to tell us what to do.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the essence of it. And then we overlay that with really, the other two things that really move the market are the Fed liquidity and the derivative markets, which people would be known as the options markets. And option markets then drive the volatility markets, because volatility is just an expression of option trades, okay? And so, knowing where those sit and the direction they're going determines whether or not we actually even take the signals or not, okay? If we have a Fed liquidity drying up and we have buy signals, well, those buy signals are likely to fail. So we just don't take the trade. So it's just like sailing, right? You want to throw up the spinnaker, right? You don't want to be beaten into the wind all the time. So sometimes you're trading heavier than other times. But usually when there's bad news in one sector, it usually means good news in another. So we just go to we just move the cows to a new pasture, Dave.
It's kind of like water finding its own level. When you made that comment about, the lead dog and what they don't sniff, you know what that reminded me of? You put me in the mind of Bill Belichick, the football coach for New England when he had Tom Brady and they were winning all those Super Bowls. He would make comments like that. So you guys are really on top of the game, obviously. I don't know what the right term is, but where are you guys at in terms of like rate of return of profitability? I mean, do you have any stats you can throw at us?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, right now, our winning percentage actually has ticked up. So we're at 65.14%. This is out of nearly 766 trades, okay?
So you win 65% plus trades.
Yeah, so that's okay. Yeah, we record every trade we put out to our subscribers. So that 65.14%. I put a target and a stop in there too. So I do that for my accountability. People can manage their own trades, the best they can. But yeah, and then so the annualized gains based on that is 115.91% based on a 3-day hold, mm-hmm. assuming you're 100% invested. So not too shabby with the market being down so much.
I swallowed my coffee hard when you said it. Can you give that last number again, assuming you're fully invested?
Yeah, 115.91% annualized.
Gosh.
So I'm looking at the last 21 trades we did, and we are down on two of them. I lost 21. So we're just, we're in fuego right now. And one of them is GDXJ, because they just keep banging on the miners. Every time we get a buy signal, it's not quite ready for prime time. But when the Fed pauses, gold and silver will have their day. Another one is SunPower, which I love. I own long-term in my long-term portfolio. Best chip maker out there in renewable energy. But I think what's happening in China is really causing a lot of issues for the chip makers right now. So those are my only two losses in the last 2021. And let me see here. And before that, actually the last 25 trades, I had two losses before I had any losses beforehand. So so we're doing pretty well. And all the trades that we're in, that I have people in right now live today, all of them are green except for one.
If you were a major league pitcher and you retired this year, you'd be in the Hall of Fame in 5 years. First available vote. Those are incredible numbers. I wanted to ask you about what's going on in China, where Xi Jinping had his predecessor dragged out of a meeting, physically, bodily dragged, and then he basically declares himself dictator for life. What are the implications of these kinds of moves?
Well, basically, he's following the Mao model and he's getting rid of the reformers. And so he has an idea and a plan for China's future. And I think he just got tired of people intervening in those plans. So I don't think it's good news, because the people he's bringing on board are hardcore military and that ilk. But China has major strategic disadvantages right now. So they get a rapidly aging population. They're feared and loathed around the world now, and so they don't have any natural allies except for pretty much Russia, right? And they geography is a problem for them. So they have to import a lot of raw materials to keep that engine going. And so there's a lot of places around the world where the U.S. and other countries can cause mischief on China. And then they're going to lose more and more of their export markets because of the their only really advantage that people have is with their labor rates. When you go into China with your factory, the Chinese governments expect you to give up your trade secrets. Okay. People were willing to do that if they get a 30% labor arbitrage, right? But they're not willing to do that anymore. And so they don't have a wage arbitrage anymore. So they're losing out to countries like Vietnam, India, Indonesia, and such. And so I think he's trying to see if he can retool the country and do things more domestically. But you're going to find out that statist totalitarian countries can't rely on themselves. You can't be a hermit kingdom and be centralized. You're just going to create misery, and you're not going to move the needle technologically to maintain your superstar. You'll be like Russia in 20 years, where you're just a backward country with a lot of nukes.
Yeah, economic incest is what I like to call that. You're absolutely right. It does not work. The Belt and Road Initiative, is it alive and well? And was it China's attempt to colonize the world?
No, it's not alive and well. I mean, there's a rule, right? So, if you lend somebody money and they're not in your backyard, you can't take the asset, right? So what are they going to do when the Port of Rotterdam doesn't pay their bill, right? Is China going to go and nationalize the Port of Rotterdam? Are they going to take it over? The Dutch would nationalize it in a minute and just take it from China. So China has all these assets all around the world through, deceptive lending practices tied to basically bribing dictators and politicians. But when push comes to shove, you know, if you have a port that's causing your people misery and the people don't like it, well, it's going to force the politicians to make a change. And so that's what China did. They, you know, United States did a series of incentives, right, to build their coalition. And United States might be hated, but nobody leaves us, right, because it's in their economic interest not to. China doesn't understand that concept. They're very win-lose, right? And so there's no economic incentive other than they only pay off the upper echelon, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They don't make it in the economic interest of a country to be aligned with China.
Yeah.
It's only the economic interest of the elite. And the only reason why they know that is because that's all they understand in their country, right?
They bribe leaders to give them what they want, even if it's not in the best interest of the country they represent.
Yeah, and so you don't have natural. It's not naturally sustainable. You know, you lose that politician, or push comes to stuff like what happened to Sri Lanka. Then next thing you know, you don't have support anymore. You know what I mean? And then you lose the asset.
No, that makes absolute perfect sense. At one time, the Belt and Road Initiative was so prominent in places like Africa, I thought they were going to colonize the whole continent. And I saw AFRICOM as the one deterrent for that, you know, our military force that's there. But that seems to have slowed down, except in places like South Africa. And here's what I hear, and I want you to address this fear that I hear from people, that they're afraid the world's really going to go to these gold-backed currencies that Russia really kind of started into motion. They're not in control of it, but they started it. And that people are going to abandon the American model. The dollar is going to fall because people don't have to buy the dollar to buy oil and so forth and so on. Are those fears overblown?
I think so. You know, the dollar is going to be the most stable currency in the world. So you're going to want to transact into something that's going to have value. And so what else are you going to transact in? And, you know, who's going to trust how much gold China and Russia have?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, that's the thing about these commodity backed, you know, baskets is like, well, who does the counting, right? China could say they have all that much gold. Do we know that? Or China, are you going to move your gold to another country when you have a transaction? Of course they won't. So that's why it'll never happen. So that was the problem before, you know, you know, England can get away with it because they, and the United States, because there's a level of trust between the two systems, you know, but, you know, you're, you know, Russia and China to say, hey, we're going with gold back, you know, currency, right? They're like, okay, well, how much gold do you have? Well, trust us, we have this much. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So. And there's something else going on too. And I'm trying to put two and two together on this. Iran is really on the verge of an overthrow. I mean, I've never seen the people rise up like this for decades in Iran. They're just furious. And what I'm wondering here, one, is this CIA-sponsored, and is this to cut short the fact that Iranian oil would be used by these gold-backed countries? And is this, do you think, a CIA plot to overthrow a government to stop that from happening?
Well, I'm sure the CIA is happily enabling it, but it's pretty organic. Where I live in an area with a lot of Persian emigres. In fact, Saturday night we had dinner with a couple that actually, you know, escaped as children, you know, to the United States from Iran, and they were telling us that it's very organic. The level of hate for the regime in that country is palpable, and people are, and you know, that country is very young. And so the people there are now, they're openly battling the police, okay, in the streets. And he said, it's just a matter of time. He said, that's a shame. He said, the regime is, you know, just being very brutal.
Is this targeted towards the mullahs, the people's hate?
Yeah. They want to get rid of the mullahs. You know, if you lose the mullahs, Iran is a natural U.S. ally.
Exactly. That's what I've said always. You know, it's interesting. I remember after 9/11, Bob, that we had a soccer team play in Iran, and against state orders, the people sponsoring the event paid homage to the victims of 9/11. That was the Iranian people, not the government, the people.
Yeah, and out here, I think there's 1 million people from Persia. I don't even call it Iran. They call themselves Persians here, and they have all the connections back there, and it'll be an amazing event. Look, the Saudis don't want it, okay? The Russians don't want it. They want Iran to stay where it is, believe it or not. A free and prosperous Iran would be a major competitor around the world. It's the United States' best interest that it happens, so then we can let loose that oil in Iran and the price of energy would collapse. So there's a lot of reasons why, state actors would like to keep the mullahs in power, but I just don't think it's going to be possible long term. I think, there's only so many police and only so much military, and these people have families too, right?
Right.
So, at some point they say it's not worth it, and they'll just switch sides.
I see that very trend. It's the media is kind of sitting on this, so I'm getting information from other sources, but yeah, the discontent is off the charts right now. I mean, they make our unhappiness with Biden look like recess, in terms of how angry the average person is. You're kind of a light, you're a beacon in a dark sea right now, though, Bob, because people, I think, are making such bad economic decisions. So people are listening to this and they go, well, Bob's kind of bared his soul about Trade Genius and how they're doing what they're doing in this economy. How do I become a part of it? So what would you say to them?
Yeah, just go to tradelikeagenius.com and check out. We have 7 bundles: stocks, crypto, day trading, training, 65% off. Where you can go to anything not bundled, promo code Halloween, and I think it's 40% off. But if
Here,
I'm
let me
wrong,
pull this up here on the
it's
perspective.
higher. I don't pay attention to that. My my
Bob, I
my
got good
my
news. It's
partner.
50% off.
50% off. See, I even was going to shortchange you guys,
It's
but
50%, yep.
yeah. So and it's available till Saturday, the 30th. Take advantage of it. You like what we do? We'll help you make money. We'll get you on the right side, and you'll learn a lot.
I think this is absolutely an incredible thing you're doing. Let me ask you this, because you thrive in the bad times, and I've talked to you enough to know this is true. As the American economy turns further south, Trade Genius turns further north. What would happen if the economy were to suddenly right itself? We have regime change, we're moving forward, oil's released, we're energy happy again. How would that affect what you're doing?
We would shift to infrastructure plays, but that's where we're going. So it'll shift to the banks, basically back to the industrials. So
Wow.
I fully expect that over the next 2 years. After this dip, there's going to be a concerted effort to reindustrialize the United States, and you're going to see money moving into that sphere. Construction companies, big engineering firms, companies like Caterpillar. All the energy names will still be good. So all that stuff. Nothing's going to change. It's just a
I
shift.
agree. The momentum is there. The obstacle is the ruling party. And they've shown no sense of understanding what's going on around them. I mean, they're stubbornly holding to what has put this country in this bad position. So it's going to take a political overhaul here, I think, this November and again in 2024. How long are we going to stay in this recession that we're in?
Well, there's rumors that we'll have a positive GDP print coming, but
Well, okay.
we're gonna dip into first half of 2023 is gonna be probably the nadir in this, and we'll come out of it going into 2024. It all depends on the price of energy and the price of credit. So if credit and energy keep moving higher, then the recession will be deeper. Okay, and because of the cost of living will be, so, there's a difference between inflation and cost of living. We have our own podcast on that. So you can have high cost of living as non-inflationary. It's just that you're just limiting what you're able to afford,
Exactly.
right? So inflationary meaning is that there's just too much money sloshing around, and so you have. And depending where it gets sucked up, whether you have inflation or not. So, if the cost of housing and the cost of food and the cost of maintaining your credit card and the cost of buying a car, all those things continue to rise, then the recession is going to become deeper and deeper because you just get a substitution on it.
That's really well said. And unfortunately, we're out of time. So let me just repeat the essentials you gave, because people are going to write to me if I don't say this. You get involved with Trade Genius by going to tradelikeagenius.com. This deal is good through Saturday, and the deal is 65% off the bundled items, 50% off the non-bundled items with the coupon code Halloween. And folks, you heard the numbers, a success. I strongly recommend you take a long look at this, because there's not many opportunities like this out here. Bob, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave. Take care. See you later.